What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore. We're back with our Whiskey Wednesday episodes. We guys know that we run, that are avid listeners, we run two episodes every single week, Whiskey Wednesday, in the middle of the week, where we take things that are going on in our world and how they affect our short-term rental investing so that we can stay up to date on the ever-changing environment out there with the economy and the short-term rental environment, everything else. And so, and then on Fridays, we bring in short-term rental investors where we dive into their journey, sharing the good, the bad, the ugly. So today we've got the Vodacy team in house. We got Mike, Josh, and our main man, Jake Sheehy, in studio with me, kind of hitting all the buttons and making sure everything works. And so, guys, we're going to dive in. So we, I always like to start off with a couple like shout outs and some questions. You guys know that you email in questions to us. We have some properties to shout out, some new launches that we're seeing. Want to give some love to them, but also questions that people are sending into us. And Andrea sent in a couple questions. And so we'll start with some of those questions. If, as a reminder, if you're a listener, you always send your email in your questions to support@vodacy.com. And we'll do our best to answer those questions intelligently on Whiskey Wednesday. And so, Jake, let's start with Andrea's questions. There we go. I got him. Andrea, is there a go-to checklist that you refer back to for general acceptance of what will make a good STR or not? The answer to that, Andrea, is we have a lot of checklists. There are a lot of checklists that we've developed over the years. And so I wish I knew exactly what part of the process or the short-term rental investing journey you're in right now so I could point you to a specific checklist. But the answer to that question is yes. There are fundamental things that we follow, processes that we follow, blueprints that we follow, recipes that we follow. You'll hear us talk about all of those different things, and they all come down to a checklist. And it depends on what part of the process you're in. Most of the time, they're going to revolve around three major phases, which is the acquisition phase, buying the right property in the right area, the setup and management phase, which is creating a unique experience for a target audience and being able to deliver that experience on a regular basis consistently. And then final phase is marketing, being able to stand out in a crowded marketplace. So Andrea, I wish I knew exactly what phase you were in, and I point you to some resources and checklist. And so if you are listening to the answer to this question, that the answer is yes, we have them. And I invite you to email us back to support@vodacy.com. Tell us what phase you're in, and we'll try to point you to specific checklists that could be helpful for you. And then the next question Andrea has is about design. So we're going to bring in our expert designer. So Mike, get ready for this one. Andrea said, I have always gone for a classic affluent feel, mostly flat black accent furniture, one or two large fake plants that fill up unused space, beds that must have a fresh, clean look. What do you think about that design approach?
Well, it sounds kind of like a classic bachelor pad to me, you know, except the furniture is matte black instead of high gloss, I guess. But still, you got, I think she's actually hitting the nail on the head, Sean. That does sound like a classic furniture approach for a short-term rental. You know, she used flat black accent furniture. I wouldn't say that that's necessarily the go-to for an affluent feel, but I think what she's saying is it's neutral, right? It's a neutral earth tone. Everybody's doing that, of course. Then she's adding one or two fake plants to fill up unused space. Beds with a fresh, clean look, meaning usually just you know, white linens, maybe a very few throw pillows, very clean, very easy to maintain, and maybe one fancy light fixture in the middle of the room. What I hear is 85 to 90% of listings, what I just described. What is not being addressed here is the thematic connotation of the room or any form of dynamic artwork, pops of color that are going to stop the scroll, just no storytelling. And quite frankly, that's what's going to start to separate your property out from amongst the others, is if you're actually telling the story or the narrative of the area. So if you want to go for a classic affluent feel, then going with straight neutral tones, keeping everything super monochromatic, making it look like very many people's homes, that's going to be the safe space that most design falls, because most people doing their rentals aren't professional designers. Though I've worked with many husbands and wives that fancy themselves so. I would say that what you're really getting is the middle of the pack with that line. So Andrea, if you want to stand out, you can still be affluent. You can still be timeless, which is different than classic. Classic implies something old that you're continuing to keep alive. Timeless implies it never goes out of style. You can't tell if it's classic, current, or future. It's always. So I would say that the key here is to be timeless, to be narrative, to tell a story, and to use pops of color and dynamic artwork to stop the scroll.
Yeah. Awesome. And so, yeah, I would agree, Andrea, this is a very, very common path when it comes to design in the short-term rental space. Mike used the word safe. I feel like that is not the correct word. I think it's one of the most risky paths as an investor to do that, because you end up coming in to the, you blend into the crowd, right? There's nothing that differentiates you from somebody else in your market. And as an investor, that's really risky. If I become a commodity in any game, it's a race to the bottom. The only thing the consumer judges me on is price. And so we really have to take our design outside of the box of traditional design feel and thinking, right? You're talking about a classic design in your question, if you will, the word classic, and it's saying, hey, listen, I want to make this feel like really nice and luxury and more like traditional design rules and, you know, the they're going to apply. The problem is that's a model home, and there's a lot of model homes, really pretty homes. Those are pretty homes. They're not immersive experiences. And so it's really important to go outside of that box of being traditional and saying, how can I create these immersive experiences that are not necessarily traditional design, but they are really fun, immersive, bringing the area to life, bringing your target audience and their interests to life, where they can step into this property, and it now not doesn't become a property that I'm selling anymore. I'm selling an entire experience for a specific target audience. And so that's what you really want to think about. And when, and so like what Mike said in your head and in to your, you know, question and your credit is saying, I want to come out with something really nice, right? That's universally acceptable. And because it's so universally acceptable and everybody likes it, it's not that we don't like those types of designs. We love those types of homes. We live in those types of homes, right? Mm-hmm. And so, and when we try to become, you know, a pleasing to everybody, it becomes this model home and everybody has them. And that is just a commodity in our space anymore. And so we have to do something different to raise the bar, create these immersive experiences so that we give the consumer a reason to say, hey, I like that above and beyond everything else available to me in this marketplace. And if I don't do that, guess what they do? They say, well, now there's a whole bunch of homes available to me. They all look about the same. Proximity is the same. They're in the same market. They have the same amenities. And so all I'm doing is looking and saying, who's the cheapest? And that is that's a really tough game to play as an investor. And so I'd encourage you to start to dive into what we're talking about with immersive design. And we've got some resources you can check out and click on, because we always do shout outs on the show. And that's the next section, which we've got three properties in our Vodacy family that just launched this week with some really successful launches. And shout out to Jesse. I'll leave last names off of here, but we will put the show notes in here so you guys can go click on them, walk through what we're talking about. And all three of these homes, Andrea, are more of that immersive experience type of design. And so what it is, pay attention to who you think the target audience is. What do you think that most of these are trying to bring the area to life in the property, right? Why are they coming and visiting that area, and how are we going to bring it to life in this property and design? So Jesse's got a property called Skyview at Washington in Bartlett, New Hampshire. We can go check out. Shout out to Jesse. Tyler and Shannon have a property, Magic Mountain in Grand Lake, Colorado. Looks amazing. And George and Libby have one in Hollister, Missouri, which is the Branson area. And so congrats to all of you for the hard work of acquiring, getting through that setup phase, right? That acquisition phase, I always say, is like a marathon. The setup phase is like a sprint, and you're super tired at the end of it. And that launch phase is that sigh of relief, like, okay, finally, it all came together after all that money we spent, and money starts coming in now. So shout out to all three of you. Great job on launching those properties. Andrea, go check out the links in the show notes so you can check out what we're talking about when we're talking about the differences in design that we're suggesting that would stand out in a crowd. So this section of the show, guys, we are going to bring in Mr. Josh Lehue, and we're going to talk about the things that Mike doesn't like to talk about, which is, you know, the rules, regulations, some of the things going on with Airbnb, some of the things going on in some of the markets that we're looking at. I know you've got some regulation things to talk about, Josh. Well, I'll bring in some economic numbers on the real estate side. And then we will wrap up with Mike going into some funner stuff. And we're going to talk about, we promised you last week, we're going to talk about the men and the women and how we look at bookings differently and why it's important to appeal to both when we're setting up these properties. So Josh, let's start with you. What are the topics we got on the agenda?
Can I just point out how much I enjoy how you indirectly just called Josh not fun?
I'm with Josh. I've got the economic data. Josh has regulation data. Like, I just know it's not fun to you. It's some of the most important stuff we're watching.
Number candy.
Yeah. I mean, like the guy, they would do like algebra for fun. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Awesome. Yeah. So, two things here, one, the mayor of Washington, D.C. has proposed legislation that would loosen D.C.'s very restrictive short-term rental rules to let residents rent out their homes on platforms like Airbnb, especially around major special events tied to the upcoming America 250 celebration. So America's got to be 250 years old this year, right? So the city's anticipating high volume of tourism for the 250 celebration, and this is going to create a new special event category that the mayor can designate major events during which these residents may rent out their homes to visitors. This is becoming more common in a lot of these markets around special events, and in my backyard, which is Augusta, Georgia area, this happens in the Masters. There's a whole business model where companies will essentially come in and take over your home for the week of the Masters, and you're paid to go on vacation. And in some of these properties, that week of rental or 10 to 15 days of rental will pay their entire year of mortgages, right? And so this is one-time special event in DC, and they're going to allow the residents to be able to take part of that economic, growth there for that event. Other things I think we've touched on Whiskey Wednesday a couple weeks ago, you're seeing this in some of the World Cup markets around the U.S. Yeah. With that, though, in most cases, you're signing a 30-year mortgage. So I don't know if a one-time event is necessarily the reason to jump through a hoop on this. But maybe for those arbitrage people, that there may be a lot of value there for them in that capacity.
Yeah, I agree. We definitely don't want to chase markets based on special events. You don't want to invest long term into some of these markets with special events. I think it's kind of funny, and like the DC area, highly regulated against short term rentals. You start to see that they stay. Well, maybe we'll open it up for a minute because we have a lot of people coming in and we can't accommodate them all. The other thing is they see dollar signs with the hospitality taxes that we're all going to be, the tourists are going to be paying, and we're having to charge as hosts on there, and so. On one hand, they say we don't like them. Go talk to San Francisco, New York, ask them how they're, how bad short-term rentals hurt the affordability in their markets. And all of you residents that are there, I'd ask the question is, did your rents go down since short-term rentals left your market? And the answer to that is absolutely not. The rents have gone up. Short-term rentals were not hurting your affordability in that market, but it did take a big tax chunk out. And so there's a lot of these markets that are kind of revisiting the fact of, maybe the pendulum swung a little bit too far one side, and maybe we kind of like this, the short-term rentals and the tax revenue and the guests that are coming in for the tourists that are coming in for the local economy and spending money there and all those different things. There's a lot of benefits to that. And, the case study of this has hurt the long-term, affordability and the rent affordability and the rent, in those areas has proven not to be the case. And so I'm interested to see if we see more of this outside of just special event stuff, where they're saying, hey, listen, maybe we want to open this back up. Now, I am a fan of regulations. I am a fan of having areas with rules and making sure that they're, because we need responsible hosts. We need to have, local economies responsibly adding to the strain on the infrastructure. There are some markets that are, especially some of these little small destination markets, they're one lane, they got one road in and out of an area that all of a sudden blew up, and there's so many short-term rentals that the actual infrastructure is getting strained to the point where the municipalities can't keep up with it. And so there are times and there are places for regulations. I'm not here to say that I don't believe in, just no regulations, but I find it interesting in some of these urban markets like a DC who is very anti short-term rentals. Now all of a sudden we're starting to see kind of cracks in the door, and now this one's on a special event. I'm waiting for those bigger ones to say, maybe we like it in some areas outside of the special events. So yeah, good stuff to watch. Obviously, regulations are something that we'll always be, keeping our eye on, and they're changing. It's an ever-changing environment. If you are in the short-term rental investing game, you really want to pay, you know, close attention to some of the big changes, especially in some of the major markets, because a lot of smaller markets will see what happens in the major markets and make decisions based on that. So yeah, good stuff. Josh, I know you have another one on the regulation right. side, which we kind of agree with on this one, right?
Yeah, 100% here. Maryland, this is from Fox Baltimore. Maryland has passed a new law requiring short-term rentals to meet stricter fire safety standards during this mm-hmm. summer. This happened after unfortunately, there was two deaths at an Airbnb fire in 2022 from a Long Island short-term rental while vacationing with their family. In general, and not knowing Maryland's normal laws is, I mean, I think that type of basic fire safety is pretty standard with your insurance policies, at least with mine. With proper insurance, it absolutely is. We have to have, you know, regularly serviced and fire extinguishers, carbon monoxide alarms, fire alarms. Where we are in Hilton, so we own in Hilton Head, South Carolina, they just passed a new ordinance that if you are over 3,500 square feet, you have to have a commercial fire alarm system, which isn't necessarily a massive expenditure, but it is going to be something to say, hey, this large of a property, we need to see some sort of better fire protection here. I'm all about that. That, you know, you have an LLC that is a corporate veil, but that veil is very quickly pierced, so to speak. And I think that's a no brainer here, that making the safety of your guests or your family when you're staying at your property should be, you know, a number one concern.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not going to spend a ton of time on this. I couldn't agree more. This is just one of those that, as a host, whether you're required by law to do this or not, Maryland, I can't believe that this wasn't a law already. Like, you should have fire safety standards. When you are, like, we're running these as businesses, people are in and out of these properties. There needs to be standards set when it comes to fire safety and mitigation and prevention and warning systems and everything else. Right. And so this is one of those that if you're hearing this is just as a host and you're not doing this, you know, get it together. I don't care whether you're made to do it or not. This is something we should do as responsible hosts. You know, this was a really, really unfortunate incident and that happened with the house fire, loss of life. You're really unfortunate. We want to mitigate those types of things as much as possible. And so as a host, you know, you need to be responsible whether you're told to do things or not. And there are certain things you do. Most of your insurance companies are going to require it. So, but yeah, we definitely want to make sure that that's in place. So awesome. So regulation wise, just as always a reminder, we'll try to bring you some of the things that are hitting the news every single week when it comes to regulations. Those are a couple of the things that are. The other news things that are happening is U.S. home builder sentiment declines again. As of April 2026, overall builder confidence fell again, signaling broadly negative sentiment about the new single family home market. Sales expectations for the next 6 months dropped 7 points. Buyer traffic fell 3 points. Survey reports 36% of builders cut prices in April. And so does this mean opportunity or risk? And so this is just a broader look and at what's been going on in the residential real estate market. And we've got a couple unfortunate things that have happened since the Great Recession. And one of them is that there was a huge departure out of home building, and subcontractors and builders, especially the smaller builders, got out of the game in the Great Recession. In that 2008 slide, we started, and then that started this massive gap between supply and demand. And so it's like very universally accepted, doesn't matter what articles you're reading, there's a massive supply gap when it comes to residential single family homes in the US. Depending on the report you're reading, it's anywhere from about $6 to $10 million homes short. Currently, the US home builders can only build about 1.2 million homes. So it's going to be really, really hard for them to catch up. What this does is put artificial pressure on prices, not artificial, real pressure on prices, because supply and demand, right? So it keeps prices high, inventory low. And now we have an environment where the buyers are very hesitant. And so what we have in the US right now is we don't have a lot of the mom and pop builders that we used to have pre-recession, pre-2008, right? And so we have these massive national builders. And when these national builders say, hey, listen, they control all they really control the majority of the lots, the majority of the land. And so you don't have the mom and pop builders that are incentivized to start to go build these affordable homes, bring up our inventory, bring prices down, give us some options. And when the big builders start to say, we're going to not build right now because we're having to cut prices and we'll just sit on stuff, right? They can afford to do that. That is going to put
more pressure on the housing market, and it's going to put more pressure on prices on the upward side because there's less supply. Even though there's less demand out there than there has been, we don't have enough supply of homes in the U.S. for the population growth we're seeing. And it's this massive problem that just feels like it just keeps snowballing out of control. So what's the lesson in all this? Is this an opportunity or is this a risk? Well, if you own property, it's a, you know, it's a really good time to own assets, right? It's good to have those assets. They're, you know, they're protected. Like, any scarcity is a good thing when you are in any sort of a market, right? When you have property that is scarce, it's not a bad thing to have. Why you're not seeing prices drop significantly, though, for all of you that are out there sitting, waiting for prices to drop and waiting for, the next crash to happen in the real estate market, this is exactly why it's not going to happen, because
there's not enough supply out there for it to, like, we need more supply for that crash to actually happen. And so even though buyers are, we had a couple episode or two ago, or, a few episodes ago, where we were talking about only there's 8 or 17% of people think it's a good time to buy right now. That means 83% of the U.S. population thinks now's a bad time to buy, right? And so it's very, very interesting, because I'm part of that 17%. In fact, I'm on the real strong side of the 17% of this is a really good time to buy. Because good times to buy are when everybody else is sitting on the sidelines saying now's not a good time to buy. Historically, there, you go back almost any period in history, and it will show you that when everybody's scared, like, that's why Warren Buffett, quoted that same quote, hey, be fearful when everybody's greedy, and greedy when everybody's fearful. And so now is a really good time to buy, but because there's a lot of money just sitting on the sidelines, 7.6, 7.8 trillion, I think, right now, sitting in cash equivalent accounts across the U.S. That's a massive amount of money, record numbers amounts of money sitting on the sideline, not making a move. And, with inventory low, prices where they're at, they're just holding, they're not dropping. They're not really skyrocketing right now. We can negotiate prices. We just saw builders are dropping prices. It's a good time to buy right now. And so it's something to consider, but this problem, and this is showing that this problem is just going to get worse, right? Prices are going to artificially, I keep saying the word artificially. It's not artificial. I don't know why I keep saying that. Sorry. The reality is, it's what really is happening is where, when the builders aren't going to build, the major national home builders are controlling inventory right now because we just don't have enough small home builders out there in the market. It's like they got out of it and they never got back into it. And so the big builders are the ones that are kind of, if they're going to build us out of this problem, it doesn't appear that they're going to. And so prices are going to hold where they're at, most likely start to go up, especially if we have any changes in interest rates and everything else. And so, it's something to really watch, but something to consider. And the other thing is the Fed is tightening up lending standards. And so makes it even harder, right? It's like they only want to give the loans to the people who don't need the loans. And so all of those things are headwinds in the real estate game. And when you have headwinds, that's when it presents the biggest opportunities. So some of us and some of you out there listening are in a position to take advantage of these opportunities. Maybe you're not in a position, and I'm not telling you to go, put it all on black and hope for the best, right? There are headwinds that you have to be able to navigate for a minute, but there's also some really good opportunities on the back end with the short-term rental side. But when it comes to inventory, it being a buyer's market, even with short inventory, prices aren't going to skyrocket down or drop out of the bottom like a lot of people are waiting for them to happen. I just don't think, that it's, economically, there's just basic economics, supply and demand is not going to allow that. And so, but if you can go negotiate some price cuts and negotiate some terms, if you are able to get a loan, even though they're tightening up the credit out there, which again is just going to make the problem a little bit worse, in my opinion. And honestly, it's not the residential real estate market is not really where this is the problem is happening on the banking side. If you pay close attention to any of the economics on the real estate segments, the commercial side is really putting a lot of strain, especially on local regional banks. because they're, you know, all those apartment complexes, a lot of them are coming due. They're having to refinance them at higher rates. They're not worth it anymore because all commercial real estate is valued based on their net operating income. And now they're having to refinance at higher rates. Their net operating income goes down, which means the value goes down and they can't get appraised. And there's a lot of people underwater on these properties. And so it's putting a lot of strain on especially the regional banks, but the large national banks can many times handle that strain. But the smaller regional banks start to get really hit with some of these problems in the commercial side of real estate. And that is trickling down into the residential side. So they tighten up. They don't want to give loans out. And so there's, you know, when they talk about the K-shaped economy, and if you know anything about what that is, there's a part of the economy that's really, you know, able to take advantage of a lot of these things right now. If you are part of that, you know, in my opinion, you should be doing it, right? Don't feel bad if you're in a position to take advantage of the things that are out there, because there's many people who aren't in a position to do that. And it's unfortunate for sure. But the only, just because other people can't do it doesn't mean you shouldn't. And so if you're in a position to do it with those headwinds, you know, understand that there's, in my opinion, some massive opportunities out there. And we'll keep watching it. We'll keep talking about it. But there's, like we talked about, we won't dive into the full details, but you're looking at two different economies. The residential real estate economy and what's going on navigating those waters, and then the short-term rental economy on the back end on how you make money with these properties. The one has some challenges, some headwinds, some opportunities to buy the right way. The other side, where the consumer's spending the money, they're not showing any signs of slowing down. You know, no matter what we're talking about here on the headwinds, we are not seeing the American consumer slow down at all when it comes to how much money they're spending on travel. And so it is that side of life is looking really rosy, which is good news for those of you buying properties. So, Mike, I appreciate you sticking with us when we're talking about regulations and economy and everything else. I know that you're like, come on, guys, like hurry up. Like, let me get to my stuff. Right. So,
well, look, you talk all the time. It's a three-legged stool, right? You don't get to me if you can't navigate getting the property and paying for it in the first place.
I like it. So we promised them last week, we were talking a lot about design and we were talking about a lot about, you know, consumer behavior and the things that we're looking at to really put ourselves in a position to, you know, make the money and maximize these assets on the back end. And there are people spending the money and they happen to be two different sexes, men and women, and we spend money differently. And so, you know, I love how you break this down, and I'm going to let you talk to us about what men like, what women like, and why we need to have and address both of them in the setup of our properties.
It's so important because, as in most widgets that are being sold, you have to understand who your customer is to sell your widget. And a short-term rental is a widget. It is not a house. The biggest mistake that most new short-term rental owners make is thinking of their property as their home or their extra home or their other home and not as their small business. So when you get a small business, you've got to sell your product. And in order to sell your product, you've got to know who your customers are. Now, contrary to popular belief, there are two sexes, and there are men and there are women, and men think of things in a certain way and women think of things in another way. Now, unfortunately, my father passed away when I was very, very young. So I was raised by a single mom. So in growing up, I learned how to speak fluent girl, which has come in quite handy with my wife and three daughters. But there is a much different way that men and women shop. There's a much different way that men and women process information, and there's a much different way that men and women approach short-term rentals. So understanding first and foremost, who is the customer based on your property type? Okay. Number one, if you're selling a property that is targeted at couples, your primary customer is going to be men, not women. So that means that you're going to be thinking about the things that makes a man get excited when looking at a property for a couple's retreat. I'll get to some more stats on that. When you're looking at a family dynamic, when it's got children involved, 80% of the booking decisions are going to be made by mom. And that overlays in just about everything in life. When you think about doctor's appointments, when you think about getting to and from practices, a lot of times, 80% of the time on average, that's mom. That's getting the kids and the family where they need to be when they need to be there. I'll be honest, if something's wrong with me, I go to my wife and say, man, I feel like I have this problem. And until she schedules me a doctor's appointment, I just live with it. And you know, that's pretty much how most men operate. So even if the guy is the one swiping the credit card or the one that has the Airbnb or VRBO account, she's the one calling the shots when the family's involved. So we're going to light on that a little bit first, because family listings are the primary listing component when we're looking at the Airbnb VRBO situation. Either families buying for just themselves or families combining families to go and buy as a group. Okay. So when we're looking at this, we want to think about what appeals to mom first. Well, visually, women like high fashion, high decor, beautiful complements of color theory. Women naturally gravitate towards that. When you look at any large major fashion brand or retailer, the marketing is always geared towards color and high fashion. So we want to make sure that first and foremost, our decor stands out as being colorful, but 80 to 90% of listings are not colorful. They're monochromatic. I said earlier that that's safe. You're right, Sean. It's very risky for the investor, but it feels safe for the interior designer that's being hired to come in and produce a product. Because if I stay in a neutral palette, you can't really get mad at me if I deliver something and it doesn't perform because it looks like everybody else. So they're being safe at your peril, okay? So that's an obvious. But when it comes to the psychology of what she's looking at beyond, does it look good? It gets to very simply three things. Number one, how does my family or my party integrate with the space? Okay. What this means is there a place for everyone, and everyone, do they have a place? So when you think in terms of the conventional decor method of I'm going to totally trick out the primary or the master, and then I'm going to move into the kids' rooms and the guest bedrooms, and I'm going to keep diminishing quality as I diminish guest value, that doesn't make a mom go, ooh, I feel like I can get nice equitable space by putting someone here, someone here, someone here. So she's already thinking about who's going to be ticked off by getting crammed in the junk room. The other thing is one of the fastest and largest growing segments for years in the short-term rental industry are all-girl groups going out and doing all-girl vacations, doing bachelorette parties, things like that. Men don't typically call each other up and go, hey, you know what would be really cool? Let's go get an Airbnb and all hang out together and talk and do hair and nails. This is just not a thing, right? So when you're looking at the girl groups, that same psychology comes into place with everyone having a place. Who's going to be ticked off if we're all throwing down the same dollars that I got relegated to the tiny room under the stairs while everyone else is in these lavish rooms? Now, keep in mind, sometimes the bone structure of the house itself derives a benefit, like a primary might have a really bougie bathroom, whereas a secondary bedroom might have a shared bathroom with another room. There are structural inherencies that the property delivers, but if you strategically decor those bathrooms and add the same amenities in them, you can photograph them, present them where you do show the upgrades of one, but don't make the other look downgraded. So, super important. Everybody has an equal experience. And the more you tie the vacation destination and the themes and the things that you're coming to do into that decor dynamic, not only does she start to find a place for everyone, making sure their experience is equitable, but she also starts to get emotionally bought in to the excitement, the joy, and the sheer wondrous wow, that's going to happen when the kids come in and go, this is my room. And that becomes an emotional connection as well. Okay. Number two, is it safe? Okay. Is it safe? Now, there's two ways to address safe. I don't just mean like, are you in a bad neighborhood? The truth is, a lot of times you have no idea what the neighborhood itself is. You just see a generic location when you're booking. You don't get the address until you're booked. And then you might go and say, ooh, this is not in a good location, but nobody's really looking at that on the booking side. What they're looking at is, does this pool safe for my kids? Are we on the side of a cliff? You know, is there everything in the house look no touch? A lot of people make the mistake of going, ooh, we're going to use all these bougie crystal and glass and this. to the mom of a family, especially a family like mine that has six kids, all my wife is looking at is, oh, heck no, we're not going there because I can't keep that put together. Everything's going to break and it's going to be horrible. We're not doing it. Okay. So at the end of the day, is it safe? Isn't just about having the pool alarms, which you can highlight in your listing saying, hey, look, anytime someone opens this door, there's a little button that goes out to the pool. You can highlight these little things in your listings as what I call micro amenities. That's a safety precaution, but it also translates into the decor itself. Using wood and metal lamps that can knock over, not having tons of tchotchkes everywhere that look breakable, and not going with upholsteries that look highly stainable so that the decor itself makes me go, we can roll with this place. I can cover up a lot of sin in this house when my kids get in there, okay? Then the third thing that a woman is looking at is women tend to rent homes the same way that they would buy them, which means that they're looking for something typically way outside of their price point. That's coming from my own personal experience. And they're looking at the things that women typically look at. They're looking at kitchens. They're looking at bathrooms. They're looking at, do I get an elevated experience from what I'm currently living in when I go in here? Which means that if you've got a gajillion small appliances, deep cereal bowls, I've seen a lot of really smart listings where people will take all of this stuff with the knowledge that almost 90% of breakfasts are had at the STR, while the vast majority of dinners and lunches are held away from the STR. So why not fully lean into breakfast? Show that you've got griddles, you've got waffle makers, you've got deep cereal bowls, you've got juicers, you've got everything to kickstart the day, and you put it all in one big picture on the cabinet. I don't like doing the poltergeist look where we just open all the cabinet doors and take a picture. That's kind of weird. But when we set all the stuff out strategically and we put the right graphics beside it and the right floral, and we really bring that picture to life, we show mom that she can come in here and be an awesome mom. And that again ties into the psychological component of it as well. Okay. Now let's move to the top three things that a man is looking for when he's getting in there. Okay. Number one, unequivocally for men, is the pragmatic bang for the buck. I want the absolute most stuff that I can get for my money. So if I'm spending X dollars a night for something, I'm immediately comparing it against everything else that's within the price point that makes me go, all right, these all five things look the same. I want to get the one that gives me the most things, okay? Now, there's two ways to combat this. The way most people do it when they understand the game that they're playing is they add what are called micro amenities. How many sub amenities can I add onto the macro amenity? Macro amenities are the things that are in your listing, your pool, your hot tub, your sauna, your number of bedrooms, your number of bathrooms, number of people that sleep there, etc. The micro amenities are the enhancements to the macro amenities, like all of those amazing appliances that we would be showcasing for breakfast, right? But the real way to compete against it is to not be comparable, where you just stand out so above the others by the way that you have presented your offering that I obviously think I'm getting so much more by booking this listing that I'm even willing to pay more for it because it is so far above the things that I'm competing with. Okay. So bang for the buck, macro, micro amenities, if you want to compete with everybody, or you throw the macro and micro amenities in there, but you decor it in a way that you're marketing and not just selling a pretty home. That's how you stand out. That's how you stop the scroll. Okay. Second thing is pride. Okay. Men book on pride and ego. We want, when I open the door, for you to go, oh, Dad, you are incredible. This is amazing. Look at what I have provided for you, especially if I have another couple or another family there and I was the one in charge of the booking. You better believe that I'm going to go, wow, Mike, you really killed it. Yeah, I know, you know, that's what I do. I kill it, right? That's how dads want to feel. And contrary to popular belief, I've never had a kid walk into my room and say, hey, thanks for knocking out that rent. This electricity is just, I love it. You know, I barely get a card on Father's Day. So all I can go for here is getting someone to love the STR that I booked for our family vacation and make it the coolest, most diabolical thing that I can book that makes everyone happy. Okay. The third thing, and this is the fun one, and where I go back to the couples retreat dynamic, is very simply this. A major hotel brand did a survey on the consumer behaviors of men and women as it took to coming to their resorts. And what was really interesting is that around 96% of men either listed as their first, second, or third thing that they look forward to the most on a vacation being a unique, intimate slash sexual experience with their partner while on vacation. Okay. That sounds right to me, but I think that it's really interesting when you really dig into this report, because on the female side of this, visiting botanical gardens was number 12 and having a unique sexual encounter was number 13. Okay. So when you think in terms of men and women, 1, 2, and 3, 96%, I want some unique thing happening here. And women would rather walk around and look at inanimate objects and plants than let that happen. And that meant that there was also 11 things that were more important prior to that. Okay. So what that means is that a man is looking for bang for the buck. He's looking for that impressiveness, that ego boost, but he's looking for a way to create some potential awesome experience with his partner on this trip. So the way that you do that is you look at ways to create what I call getaways inside of the getaways. But the cool thing is these are still interpreted by women as I can get away from everyone. So while the man is looking at it going, there's a lot of privacy here, outdoor shower experience, plenty of stuff. There's a little fire pit there and a hammock. I think I've got a chance here. The wife looks at that and goes, man, I could read a book in that hammock and get away from everyone and no one could ever find me, right? But either way, these are two dynamics that are really cool. So if you're building a hot tub, don't put the hot tub right there where the neighbors are all looking down on you, because the man looks at that and goes, ooh, hot tub, sexy, romantic. A woman looks at it and goes, I'm getting in that thing. Number one, women over 35 tend to hate hot tubs and view them as biological cesspools unless you can demonstrate that you changed the water and kept them clean. Side note. But at the end of the day, most women aren't down for getting out into the middle of all your neighbors looking down and frolicking where everybody can watch. So if you want to create that romantic getaway inside of a getaway, you have to look at the angles of where your neighbors are, look at the angles of where passerbys are, and block them off by utilizing strategic landscaping, strategic slat walls, curtains, all kinds of things to create the atmosphere of romance. Because at the end of the day, guys, even when a house has a game room and a theater room and a this and a that and a TV in every room, bunk beds with TVs all over them, when you're looking at all this wow factor, part of the reason that all that wow factor exists is because you buy into, oh my gosh, when we get there, we're watching a movie, we're doing this, we're playing air hockey, we're doing that. But at the end of the day, you almost don't do like 50% of the stuff in the house because you actually were like there to go somewhere and go on vacation and you didn't even get to all of it, right? That same thing, unfortunately, is true for that third level in that guy's thing. He's sitting there going, oh, this is going to happen. And this. You're just saying, hey, just like having the theater, there's a chance you can watch the movie by strategically creating privacy. There's a chance that he can check number 3 off of his list. Okay. So it's really important that if you think of all 6 of these components when coming at your design, making sure that everyone has an equal opportunity, making sure that everything is safe, not just that I've provided safety mechanisms, but that I've not overdone my design to be treacherous or look unlivable. If I make sure that I'm giving the living upgrades, that I'm not creating my home away from home, I'm giving better than, more unique than my home away from home so that the experience is elevated. I have everything that I need to be here and perform my function in the family. It's lots of bang for the buck by adding lots of micro amenities, but then decoring it in a way that you completely stand out. And then you go a step farther to make sure that it's so over the top that there's no possible other property that can outdo the street cred I get for walking in here, but then create those romantic slash private getaways inside of the getaway that could either lead to romance or a good book with no one bothering you. all six of these things added together create the psychological dynamic that a man or a woman are going to look at and go, wow, they really thought of everything. And that's just hitting those top six things. When we're doing designs inside of Odyssey, we're looking at about 50 different metrics that we're going through on top of price point, consumer behaviors, color theory, everything that a major Fortune 500 company would put into marketing their widget. If you're not doing that for your SDR, that's the unfair advantage that our members are getting that the rest of the world isn't, because we're looking at this as a business. And I tell people all the time, if you want just a pretty house, or especially if you want our team to come and do your personal home because you liked what we did at your vacation rental so much, we don't do it. Because the moment the design and the house becomes emotional to you, that's the moment that you start competing with everyone else and their emotions. Very few people are approaching this purely from a business tactical standpoint, and just thinking that way alone puts you at the top. And the more you understand these things, the more you get your unfair share of business and dominate the market.
Yeah, absolutely. Great rundown too. And just as Mike is talking about that, when you guys are listening to this, go click on the show notes, pick up those three properties that we just introduced and see if you can identify the dynamics that Mike is talking about. There is a method to the madness of what we do here at Vodacy and at Vodacy Design, and how Mike and his team put these properties together. And we want to look at them as businesses. And we look at all of these different things, all of this stuff with consumer behavior, to put ourselves in a position to operate at the top of the market. And one of the things I say a lot is, listen, the money is made at the top of the market. The top 10% of properties make all the money. That does not mean, I'm not talking about the top 10% of the highest priced properties or the biggest and best properties. There is a top property in every single category. Those three properties, I don't think any of them were luxury properties, as super expensive properties that we posted and we talked about, shouted out today. These are all very average properties with elevated experiences that are going to be at the top of their market by implementing those exact things that Mike's talking about. And we want you guys walking into this game with your eyes wide open. We want you to go in and walk into the top 10% of the market. It's why we talk about the details and why we, you know, painstakingly look at this stuff every single day throughout the process. Not only are we looking at what we call the boring stuff that Josh and I talk about on the economics and stuff, it's really all a business. It's all numbers. It's all data. And it all comes down to, how are we going to maximize these assets, build this life that we don't want to take a vacation from by having quality assets, quality areas, somebody else is paying for all of these different things that we're able to do with these properties? We have to be very, very intentional about that. The game of having a short-term rental and making money, those days are over, right? You actually have to be intentional if you want any chance of succeeding, because if you don't do that, we are all over the U.S. We're in every single market pretty much in the U.S. and we will crush you, frankly. And so it's like, it's one of those things that this is the game of the professional host at this stage. It's not the game of, let's just buy a pretty property, get a model home and put it out there and I'm going to succeed. That's not the game anymore. And so you really
Go ahead. Turo when it started?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. So I remember when Turo first came out, the whole premise of Turo was, I've got any car, right? And I'm sitting at home working, or I'm at my office working and I'm not driving my car. So I can put it on this app and somebody who needs a car during the week that I don't need can just take my ride, bum around, and bring my car back at the end of the week, park it in my driveway. And I made my car payment when I literally did nothing but go to work and let people drive my car during the day. When Turo started, it started exploding because people were just like, oh crap, I just put my car up here. And everyone was just driving each other's cars. Just like Airbnb or VRBO started with people saying, wow, I've got like a mother-in-law suite or a pool house or a spare bedroom, right? A couch that no one's on. And you just couch surfed or bedroom surfed or in-law suite surfed. And it was just an extension of your personal property, right? That made these both industries start. Until both industries realized, somebody said, hey, if I have a nicer property or a nicer car, I can get booked more and at a higher dollar amount. So all of a sudden, people are like, ooh, I've got a nice car. I'm going to put it out here for more money. And all of a sudden, people are like, ooh, I didn't know I could get such nice cars. I was just driving around the Datsun, but now I can go get this BMW, and this is much nicer. Then you had a bunch of people that said, you know what? I'm going to go buy a car that I'm never even going to drive. It's not even for me. I'm just going to park it in my driveway and I'm doing nothing but renting this thing out. So now all of a sudden my mindset shifts from what features do I like in a car to what is the Turo customer going to want in a car? And I can start to go do the research on what the top things are that people look for in rental cars or rideshare cars or whatever. And then all of a sudden, people started doing that. Having just your car listed while you went to work, you were no longer getting booked. You were no longer making money. Just like when whole houses started coming to exist, just sleeping on a couch seemed pointless. And it just keeps elevating. Then you have someone go out and they buy a fleet of cars. There are Turo people that own 100 cars, just like there are Airbnb people that own 100 houses. But then people started realizing the more features and the more marketability that I put in my vehicle or my home, the higher my price point goes. And the lower stuff where the low hanging fruit where people were just, if you had it, they will come, have been eliminated. They don't exist anymore because now the new standard is a newer car that's clean with water bottles and this, or a newer house that's clean that looks like a model home. That's the standard now. So now if you want to be at the top, you've got to figure out how to use your budget to enter the OMG feeling category of a property. You might not have the dollars to actually get in the OMG category, but I'm telling you, if you strategically play your cards right, you can make your house feel like an OMG house at a standard price point. And now in comes exotic cars. You can rent a Lamborghini now on Turo. And people are buying Lamborghinis just to rent them out and writing off the taxes. It's exactly how both of these industries have kind of grown up in the same manner. And it's really interesting to watch.
Yeah. And the thing that I'd add to that in that analogy is, like with Turo, if I want Acura prices, I have to go buy an Acura, and in short-term rentals, I can buy a Datsun and get Acura pricing, right? I might not get Rolls-Royce pricing, but I can elevate by creating those experiences and taking I don't have to always go spend the money on the best property in the area to be able to create an experience that is elevated enough to get the top pricing in the area. Does that make sense? Like there's things that we're able to do, which in the real estate game saves us a lot of money on the front end. When we save money on the front end, our investment returns on the back end are better because I have less invested, right? And so this is, again, it all comes down to strategic, you know, things that we're doing to say, hey, listen, how are we going to continue to elevate this game? And how are we going to continue to build a moat around our properties when it comes to the competitive advantages that we're building and that are less and less likely to get copied? And these immersive design type of experiences are very unique and they're very kind of category of one type of design. They don't look like everything else. And that creates a very good barrier because sometimes a consumer just needs to see different, right? And it's kind of crazy to say we're thinking about it, not just to be different, right? But there are a lot of like consumer behavior is very predictable. And consumers are willing to spend more money. They tell us all the time they're willing to spend more money in all kinds of different consumer behavior surveys. And the top things that they say they will spend more money on is unique, personalized, or different. And basically, they're kind of all the same, right? They're all very, very much like, I mean, unique and different. I mean, there's not much difference there. Personalized is why we select target audiences and we create these experiences for a target audience, not necessarily for Mike or for Josh or for Sean, but we create it for a specific target audience where it feels personalized. And we know those three things are that's enough to give the consumer, even if I don't have better amenities, even if I don't have all the micro or macro amenities that everybody else has, if I make it feel unique, personal, and different than everything else that's available to me as a consumer, I'm like, I like that, right? If I'm the guy, I'm like, I don't want my kids to walk in and say, oh yeah, I saw that, Josh went and he took his family and it looked like the exact same property, or it went, theirs was better. When you're kind of in your category of one, better is not really something that people say about other properties because it's hard to compare. Like you mentioned, Mike, you want to be uncomparable. I don't want to be compared to other stuff. I want to be so unique and so different that I don't get compared to everything else out there. I get compared to me and that's it, right? And so Guys, we're going to, I know this, we'll keep having these conversations, obviously design, unique experiences, customer experiences, all that stuff. Very, very fundamental to what we're doing and what we talk about around here at Vodacy and really creating those unfair advantages. And so we're going to wrap it up for today. Those of you that are listening and, you know, and spending your time with us, we very much appreciate it. We know how valuable your time is and it means a lot that you spend it with us, and we do our best to provide enough information for you to walk into this game with your eyes wide open, you know, put and stack those advantages in your favor to get your unfair share of business so that you can continue to raise the bar and succeed in the short-term rental game. You guys know, as you're listening to this, you didn't get interrupted with a bunch of ads or sponsorship messages. And so we, not because we don't have those offers, it's because we don't want to, we don't want people telling us what to promote and what not to promote. Second, we just want the show to grow organically. And the only way it does is if you guys share it and if you like it and if you review it. And so if you have more than 30 seconds, those things
make a big difference for us. And even if you don't have somebody to share it with, those reviews and those likes and those follows are a big deal because the algorithm will find somebody else just like you, like these conversations as much as you do. So guys, we're going to wrap up today. The final, most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today, start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends. Cheers, boys.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey, Grace, is there a website?
Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.